This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. Here are Monday's closing grain futures quotes from the Chicago Board of Trade. September corn, 356 and three quarters, up 5. December corn, 368 and a quarter, up 4 and three quarters. March corn, 381 and a quarter, up 4 and three quarters. August soybeans, 1314 and three quarters, up 30. September soybeans, 1108 and a half, down 5 and a quarter. November soybeans, 1073 and a quarter, down 11 and a half. September wheat, 546 and a half, down 2 and 3 quarters. December wheat, 562 and 3 quarters, down 3 and a quarter. March wheat, 581 and a quarter, down 4. Now time for your cash grain report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Monday's grain market report. And the Illinois country grain prices ended mixed on Monday afternoon. Corn closed higher and soybeans and wheat closed lower as traders prepared for tomorrow's USDA report. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids mixed at 339 to 360. Soybean bids down 12 to 14 cents at 1223 to 1254. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 5 cents stronger at 344 to 365. Soybean bids down 15 to 23 cents at 1207 to 1250. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were 5 cents higher at 347 to 367. Soybean bids 8 to 12 cents lower, range from 1183 to 1259. And the wheat bids down 2 to 9 cents at 451 to 507. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids ended steady to 2 cents lower, range from 1250 to 1293, with basis 10 to 12 cents higher today, range from 177 to 220 over the November. High Pro 48% soybean meal on a truck basis offered in a range of 427.40 to 445.40, which was 10 cents to $2.10 lower, with basis 3 to 5 cents lower, range from 27 to 45 over the August. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids ended 5 to 10 cents higher on Monday, ranging from 372 to 387, with basis steady to 5 cents stronger at 15 to 30 over September. Illinois River Barge Loading Elevators quoted producer corn bids 1 to 4 cents higher at 375 to 378, with basis 1 to 4 cents lower, ranging from 18 to 21 over September. Soybeans ended 7 to 15 cents higher at 1203 to 1294, with basis 18 to 26 cents stronger, range from 130 to 221 over November. East St. Louis barge loading terminal elevators place their producer corn bids 5 to 10 cents stronger at 382 to 392. These same elevators place their soybean prices mixed with quotations at 1250 to 1298. Soft red winter wheat, 2 to 3 cents lower at 499 to 512, while the Milo ended 4 to 5 cents higher at 386 to 419. Contract bids to producers for new crop delivered grain in northern and western Illinois. Country elevator bids to producers in those regions for new crop corn range from 332 to 340. New crop soybean bids at 1023 to 1062. In central Illinois, new crop corn range from 327 up to 340. New crop soybean bids 1027 to 1056. And in the southern part of the state, new crop corn bids range from 332 up to 348, with the new crop soybean bids ranging from 1041 up to 1061. That completes our country grain report for Monday. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are your closing livestock futures quotes from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. August live cattle, 152.62, up 7 cents. October live cattle, 150.45, up 45 cents. December live cattle, 151.25, up a dollar. August feeder cattle, 217.47, up $2.15. September feeder cattle, 217.42, up $2.70. October feeder cattle, 216.35, up $2.37. August lean hogs, 114.55, up 32 cents. October lean hogs, 10.017, up 85 cents. December lean hogs, 89.55, up 40 cents. Now time for your Catch Livestock Report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. I'm Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture, bringing you Monday the 11th afternoon livestock report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded at 131 lower in a range of 102 to 114 with a weighted average carcass price of 112.26. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sows were trading $5 lower on the light sows and $1 higher on the heavy sows, with moderate demand for light to moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds were 75 to 84, 4 to 5 weights 83 to 90, 5 to 6 weights 85 to 93, and 6 weights and up 87 to 95. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, barrels and gilts at country buying points were trading steady to a dollar lower, with moderate demand for moderate offerings, ranging in price from $78 to $82. From receipts for Illinois hogs today, total 12,737 head. And now from the Greenville Livestock Auction Special Feeder Cattle Report, they had receipts of 1,449 head. Starting with the feeder steers, medium and large ones. Medium and large ones and twos. Four weights were bringing 267 to 301. Five weights, 226 to 250. Six weights were 250-50, and seven weights 214 to 228. Now on to the feeder steers. For Holsteins, three weights were 216 to 249. Four weights were 218 to 251. Six weights were 171 to 190, and seven weights were 141 to 176. Feeder heifers, medium and large ones and twos, four weights 250 to 259, five weights 235 to 247, six weights were 209 to 227. Now from the National Daily Pork FOB Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts were established with 220 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was $120.52, and that was $4.47 lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values of choice and select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcasses were $259.44, that was $1.01 lower, with select carcasses at $251.62, that was $1.38 lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at $114,000. That compared to $110,000 last week and $114,000 a year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at $375,000. That compared to $337,000 last week and $420,000 a year ago. That concludes our livestock report. I'm Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are your cash grain bids from Hog Inc. August corn delivered to Greenfield, $3.67. September corn delivered to Greenfield, $3.46. August corn delivered to Scottville, $3.58. September corn delivered to Scottville, $3.46. August beans delivered to Greenfield, $12.56. September beans delivered to Greenfield, $10.57. August beans delivered to Scottville, $12.45. September beans delivered to Scottville, $10.57. August wheat delivered to Scottville, $4.76. Once again, their pre-opening prices are: corn at Greenfield is $3.67. Corn at Scottville is $3.58. Beans at Greenfield are $12.56, beans at Scottville are $12.45, and wheat at Scottville is $4.76. That's all for part one of this morning's farm show. Stay tuned for part two, coming up after this. Here is your state weekly crop and weather report. Much of the state got a break from dry weather conditions last week. The west-southwest part of the state received 2.59 inches of rain. Statewide precipitation averaged 1.45 inches, about a half inch above normal. There were 4.9 days suitable for field work for the week ending in August 10th. The average temperature was 72.1 degrees, 1.7 degrees below normal. Corn in the dough stage was rated at 77% compared to the five-year average of 62%. Corn dented was rated at 17% compared to the five-year average of 23%. Corn condition was rated at 82% good to excellent. Soybeans blooming reached 94% compared to the five-year average of 91%. Soybeans setting pods reached 79%, ahead of the five-year average of 66%. Soybean condition was rated at 78% good to excellent. Sorghum headed reached 78%, and sorghum turning color was rated 33%. Oat harvest reached 89% complete, compared to the five-year average of 91%. Pasture condition was rated at 1% very poor, 4% poor, 28% fair, 55% good, and 12% excellent. Topsoil moisture supply was rated at 2% very short, 17% short, 76% adequate, and 5% surplus. Subsoil moisture supply was rated at 2% very short, 23% short, 72% adequate, and 3% surplus. In the 1920s, U.S. corn farmers were still planting open-pollinated corn. About 1,000 genetically different varieties existed. Most of them were white dent corn. A few were high-yielding yellow dent varieties. They were popular throughout the Corn Belt and became even more so when swine feeding trials proved hogs did better eating yellow corn because it contained vitamin A. Reed's Yellow Dent was the most popular open-pollinated corn variety in states like Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa. But the farther north you were, the less tolerant it was of the shorter, drier growing season. The University of Minnesota went to work on the problem and solved it with a yellow dent corn called Minnesota 13. These two varieties, says Forrest Troyer, a farmer who spent 7 years researching and writing about his favorite crop, set the stage for the development of hybrid corn. By 1920, the double-cross hybrid method had been developed by Donald Jones. Still, it remained difficult to find four inbreds good enough to make a double-cross to sell. Henry Wallace, who founded the Pioneer Seed Company in Iowa, sold the first double-cross hybrid in 1924. It was called Copper Cross. It wasn't until 10 years later, in 1934, that hybrid corn varieties even made a dent in U.S. corn production. Forrest Troyer says that year, 0.3% of all the corn sold for seed in the U.S. was hybrid.
And Iowa was the fastest growing, partly because of the work that the editorials that Henry Wallace wrote for Wallace's Farmer. And by World War II, by 1941, 1942, I believe 90% of the corn in Iowa was hybrid, and the rest of the Corn Belt wasn't far behind, just a few more years, you know, that they, it was an amazing thing once it got going. It was quickly accepted.
In 1934, that 0.3% of hybrid seed sold in the U.S. came primarily from two companies, Pioneer and the Funk Brothers Seed Company of Bloomington, Illinois. In 1935, Troyer says the first Ag Experiment Station hybrid was introduced, U.S. 13. A year later, Iowa 939 was released. In those early years of hybridization of corn, it was thought farmers would buy the original material and then produce their own hybrids. That's how open-pollinated crosses had been adapted throughout the Midwest. But the model didn't work for hybrid corn, so the corn seed companies prospered. Pioneer and Funk, along with DeKalb, were the three largest. These three companies and experiment stations used the available open-cross yellow dent corn to develop their hybrids. It was at this point that the majority of the genetic diversification of the domesticated corn plant was lost. Today's hybrid corn comes from about 8 genetically different open-pollinated yellow dent corn lines. They include Lemming, Lancaster, Reed's Yellow Dent, Minnesota 13, Northwestern Dent, Funk's Yellow Dent, Troyer's Reed, and 176A.
But over time, the thing that happened is that those inbreds that came from those popular varieties became the backbone of the hybrid seed corn industry. And what it really amounted to, as more emphasis was put on white adaptation of the hybrids, the inbreds from the varieties that did well over a more widely adapted area came to the forefront, and they're the backbone of the hybrid seed corn industry today.
Today, Forrest Troyer says half of the seed corn sold can trace its heritage to Reed's Yellow Dent. Another 20% is directly related to Lemming, Lancaster, Minnesota 13, and Northwestern Dent. It is a narrow genetic base from which to work. He says it confines the ability of corn breeders to continue improving Yellow Dent corn. And in a world which is expected to grow by 4 billion people in the next 30 years, that could be a problem. So now the question is, how can the new generation of corn breeders use history to continue development of the domestic corn plant? If you think about it, says Forrest Troyer, the corn plant has been moved northward more than half a continent. The genetic pool from which it evolved has been sliced and diced by farmers and breeders in North America for about 3,000 years. Most of the selection pressure has come in the last 200 years, when the gene pool was divided 1,000 ways, and then more than 99% of those crosses were eliminated. That leaves a very small domesticated gene pool from which corn breeders can draw to improve the crop. Troyer says it is vital, then, that geneticists and corn breeders understand how that pool was narrowed. He suggests they start by reading the works of Charles Darwin.
Darwin's advice was to study the plant, to look at it sharply, to relate what you're seeing to the information that you've learned about botany, about how a plant works, and then through that decide what it needs to do better. Adaptation is the critical thing. Adaptation is the sole driving force as far as biological evolution is concerned. It's what makes everything happen. And so it makes all the sense in the world to think in terms of how can I make this plant better adapted to get higher yielding, more reliable corns.
The second notion Troyer says corn breeders should think about is the importance of wide adaptation. He says weather is the reason hybrid corn breeders narrowed the gene pool early in the 20th century. It was easier to market and grow a corn crop which could adapt to widely variable weather conditions.
I think most farmers understand that maybe better than most plant breeders. And so wide adaptation is a very important trait. We can select for this by having more test locations, by looking the things that don't jump around so much at different locations and different seasons, you know, very high yielding here, very low yielding over here, and so forth. We want those ones that can take the give and take that the environment puts out.
After understanding the relationship of weather to the crop and how it was used to widely adapt the corn plant across the U.S., Troyer believes the corn plant breeders of today and tomorrow will be better able to pinpoint the genetic differences which could result in an improvement. He also says the gene pool could be expanded by looking into the old crosses and the wild relatives of the corn plant, or by altering it with the genes from another organism. To him, the science remains only the science if it's addressed cautiously. In that caution, he says the world could find another green revolution. The Grand Champion 4-H youth who will be selling livestock in this year's governor's auction at the Illinois State Fair have officially been announced. Grand Champion steer is going to be sold by Shaylee Varner of Grundy County. The Grand Champion barrow will be sold by James Dobbles of Henry County. Grand Champion Weather will be sold by Brooke Reiner from Alexis in Mercer and Warren counties. Grand Champion Poultry Trio will be sold by Bailey Hunt of DeKalb County. Grand Champion Meat Goat will be sold by Tara Hummel of Cabaret in Ford and Kankakee counties. And Sarah Brown will be selling her Grand Champion Rabbit Pen. She's from Jacksonville in Morgan County. Again, those youth will be able to sell their Grand Champion livestock animals at this year's governor's auction, which will take place this Tuesday evening. That's all for this morning's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.